It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. I'm Rob Hamadani. I'm your host. I'm also the title. I'm the owner of the owner title, the author of the book Better Than You Think. And today I have a guest with me, Ty Nichols, who has a company, the Nichols Strategic Performance Group. The Nichols Strategic Performance Group LLC, but he works as the habit strategist. And I'm excited to hear what Ty has to share with us today. But Ty has a story. And as you know, a lot of these podcasts, there are some redemptive stories, and one of which Ty is going to share today. Ty spent some time in his earlier years in prison, but he learned a lot from his experience there. And he's come out, he's got this business, he's a dynamic speaker. He has a coaching or habit strategist business. And he's going to share a little bit of that today. So Ty, thank you so much for your time today and welcome to the show.
Awesome. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Ty, you told me earlier, and I didn't say this in the beginning, Ty is married now. He's got two kids and he's got this business. But early on, it was, you said 21 years old, something occurred in your life and there was a consequence for that. You want to share a little bit about that?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny because I learned a very hard lesson in, you know, that whole situation. At that time of my life, I was cooking. When I say cooking, I was the top salesman for the Mid-Atlantic region for 19 months in a row for Comcast. I'm talking New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, Virginia. I mean, I was cooking. And there was one day I was at the Dorchester. I don't know how familiar you are with DC, but on 16th Street, there's a building called the Dorchester. And this is a massive building. It's one of those apartment buildings that's so nice that there's a mall underneath the building. So on this particular day, I was setting up high-speed internet. Now, back in the day, you know, we just had dial-up. So high-speed internet was like, you know, crazy, right? 3 megabits per second. Oh my goodness. You might be able to watch a video, right? So I set up in the lobby of this building, tables, cookies, monitors, TVs, balloons. So when people came home, hey, here's Comcast. By the way, we can get you some internet right now. Within 2 hours, I made $4,800, you know, through my sales. Little did I know, less than 48 hours later, a SWAT team would be throwing me in the back of a cop car. So later on that night, I'm feeling good. I'm riding high. I just had a presentation. I killed 4,800. I was calling some brokers. I was going to buy some property in Panama. Like, I was cooking. But at this time in my life, I also had friends. And I'm talking about friends like when we were, you know, knee high. I'm talking about red light, green light, freeze tag, dodgeball, all of that. And my friends, well, some of these friends had a criminal mentality. But I always said, hey, listen, these are my friends. These are my boys from back in the day. You know, I can't just let them go. And besides, hey, I'm not doing anything wrong. They can do what they do. I'm corporate, right? That's what I do. I slang and bang corporate side. So anyway, I get a call later on that night. And a friend says, hey, you know, my nephew's having some issues. Can you come down? We just want to make sure he's okay. Now, something inside me said, no, stay home. You just made a lot of money in a short period of time. It's time to relax. I said, no. I'll be down there. Let me come down here, check it out, make sure everything's okay. So I get down to this neighborhood. I've never been here before. I pull up. I don't recognize all of these people that are out here. You know, I see, you know, a few of my friends. I'm like, oh, okay, you're out here. 2 minutes, literally 2 minutes later, there's a full-on brawl. I'm talking bottles, bats, bricks are being thrown. I'm like, holy smokes, I got to get out of here. So I hop in the car. A couple of my friends hop in the car. Boom, I get out of there, right? About 12 hours later, six massive dudes with big AR-15s and all this are banging on my door. They bang my door in, throw me on the ground, drag me out in front of all of my neighbors. And come to find out, I'm being arrested for conspiracy to commit first degree assault, and second degree murder. And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? They're like, look, your bond is $1 million.
Oh my gosh.
And I am scared out of my mind. Dude, I've never been arrested.
And you're only 21 years old at the time.
Yeah, I've never been arrested in my life. And now I'm staring down $1 million bond and I didn't even do anything. So fast forward, I was in a cell, right? And we'll get back to this when we reach that part. But, you know, I had a realization while I was there. And, you know, it that realization has guided my life from that point forward to this day. And it not only is a matter of kind of faith, but it even follows a scientific basis where I like to look at it as the, you know, the first law of thermodynamics, right? And it was because of my so-called friends that I ended up in such a scenario. And, you know, I said, okay, you know, I'll deal with the situation. I did take people away from a known crime scene. There was a fight. Something was happening. Although I didn't know the extent, I didn't touch anybody. I didn't, you know all that was going on. I didn't stop and call the police or things like that. So that's what you would call acting in concert, or the law calls acting in concert, even if I didn't physically attack anyone or plan it or have anything to do with that. So I ended up with about, I was sentenced to like 15 years or something, but it was all suspended, but 5 years, and I did almost 3 years in the state penitentiary. And even with that experience, I learned a lot from that as well.
Thank you for sharing that, Ty. You said you had a realization. Can you go back and say tell me what exactly was that realization? I know you said something about faith and friends, but I don't hear exactly what the realization was in prison.
Absolutely.
At that moment, I'm sorry.
At that moment. So at this moment, so I want to be clear too. I am not, so even taking it further back, right? I'm gonna take you all the way back. Pre-K, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, Catholic school all the way.
Okay.
Proper Catholic school. I'm talking 3 hours a day, mass, all of that. And it really, you know, while today I'm not your most religious, I'm not your most go to church, I don't even, you know, speak of it in those terms, but it was those years in that Catholic school that truly informed and framed my moral compass, right? Even at I didn't need to know what was right from what was wrong. I knew what was right from what was wrong. I knew laws of human nature. I knew, you know, God was watching and all of these kinds of things. That was ingrained in me in such a young age. And that's why when my children, their first, you know, few years in school, they went to Christian Bethel Christian Academy, mm-hmm. For their first years of schooling. They're in public school now, but their first few years, they were in Bethel Christian Academy. So now fast forward, I'm 21, 22. I'm in a prison cell. Again, I'm not the most religious. I don't, you know, go in the Bible. I know a little bit about the Bible, don't get me wrong, but I said, now I got to a point where I just started praying. Why is this happening to me? What did I do, right? I do no harm, right? I don't do anything, you know? So I said, okay, you want to answer this question for me? I'm going to open the Bible and I'm going to point to a verse and you are going to show me what I did wrong. You send me a message. So I opened the Bible. I'm in a cell. This is actual fact. I open it and I put my finger down.
Hey, wait, so you didn't know what verse you were looking for?
No, I didn't look at it. Okay. I just opened it randomly and put a finger down. And I said, guide me to what it is you want me to know.
Uh-huh.
Why am I here? And you know what I landed on, Rob? Psalm 1. Are you familiar with Psalm 1?
Go for it. Tell us. Tell us what it is.
Blessed is he that does not walk amongst evil men. And I was like, whoa, Now, I just told you earlier, I got a phone call from a friend.
Uh-huh.
And I already told you that it was my friends, they're doing, you know, they're doing their thing, but that doesn't have anything to do with me.
Right. Right?
When in fact...
I'm grabbing my Bible here.
There you go. There you go. When in fact, those who you surround yourself with do have a massive impact on your life. They do, whether you believe it to be or not.
And if some side note there, they say in the personal growth and development world, and you know, Jim Rohn is one of the godfathers of personal growth and development. He says you become the average of the five people you hang around with.
Exactly. Now you take that seminal idea that I've got at an early 20 something age, and you add that to your Jim Rohn type of statements, right? I came to learn that as well. And that has guided me. I constantly surround myself with people that are challenging me, people that are in places I want to go, where I want to be, right? And I rid myself of those who are negative, those who are in places I don't want to be. And that was a message that I gave. I just gave a speech to some folks at the Department of Justice. I was talking to some young men who were on the brink of going, you know, back in. They're on parole. They've got gun charges. I said, listen, you need to watch who you surround yourself with. Because you might say, I'm staying on the straight and narrow, but one mistake by them and you could have a problem. But even if you keep your nose clean in that way, you've got to cover your thoughts. Because
yeah.
Your thoughts then become beliefs, and your beliefs then become action. And next thing you know, you're back where you don't want to be. So you've got to surround yourself with people that are going to challenge you in a positive way and be a challenging and positive force in your life. And I told them straight like this. If the people around you are not going to change to be a positive force in your life, then you need to change the people around you. If you can't change the people around you, then change the people around you was my key message to them.
I love the energy coming through the video right now. I'm loving it, man. So you're in prison. It's the first night you said, if I got that right, you open up the Bible and you put your finger down and you come across that verse. And then so you read it. Okay. I know you get it. But so like, what would your next thought to God at that moment?
It was like, I get it. I mean, it was literally, I get it.
And
it was crystal clear to me at that point. And even while I was inside, if you weren't of a certain ilk, stay over there. You know,
so you
mean?
Started, you took that literally
very literally.
And the time you're in prison, you're like, I got to walk amongst good people.
Absolutely.
Wow. That is, I love that story, man. Thank you for sharing that. So you spent 3 years in prison and you get out, right? What was it like knowing that? Okay. Did you know like 3 weeks in advance, a month in advance, a year in advance, 2 weeks?
I mean, there were a lot of emotional moments. And again, this is a story I never told. Only my wife knows this story. So the state, the prosecutors, everyone involved in this case knows that I've been an upstanding citizen my whole life. I am a pillar of the community. I just had some bad choices in friends and I ended up in a bad situation. So they have what you call a reconsideration. All right. So a reconsideration hearing is when they'll look at your case and say, you know what? You don't have to go to jail. We're going to reduce your sentence, right? So my judge, the prosecutor, I was under the impression, I believed wholeheartedly that when I went to my reconsideration hearing, I was going to be let free. After serving like a year or so, I had my reconsideration hearing. I believed it so much that I gave all of my stuff away.
Wow.
My shirts, my radios, all of my stuff that I compiled over the year.
Within prison, you mean? The stuff you had in prison? Yeah. You were doing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Extra blankets and towels and socks and extra food. I gave it all away. I was like, listen, I ain't coming back, baby.
It's over. Geez.
I went to this reconsideration hearing and he was like, nah, you can go back. And I, when you talk about depth, I was more devastated in that moment than I was when I was initially sentenced, because when I was initially sentenced, I knew, okay, I'm going to prison. This is what's going to happen. But when you think you're going home.
Yeah.
So from that point on, I knew, okay, I know, you know, the roughly the month in which I'm going home, and I counted it down by the years, by the weeks, by the months, by the days. And when I finally was free, it was crazy, man. I must have sprinted an entire like three blocks, because see, you don't believe it at first. I don't know how much you know about, but when you're walking out, it's kind of like, all right, y'all not stopping me. This is not
somebody's on the ledge ready to get me. Somebody's going to catch me.
Somebody's about to pull up on me and take me back in there. And then once I got outside, I mean, I was sprinting up the street. It was a great feeling. But, you know, after the first, I don't know, first, you know, couple of days or week, I was ready to jump back in. Remember.
Jump back in what? Jump back into jail?
Into the world.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, wait a minute. You don't want to go back there.
No. I was the top salesman. I was the man.
Yeah. You're ready to go. Yeah.
So my wife had moved to Glen Burnie. I said, okay, whatever. Who's the cable company out there? I went to the cable company out there. They were like, I went to the interviews. Oh, Ty. Oh, you're amazing. We love what you're talking about. We've got a gas card for you. We've got two phones. We got a company car. All we got to do is do this little background check and we can get you started.
Yeah.
The next day I get the call. Oh, Mr. Nichols, we won't be able to move forward. Something came up on the background check. Devastated, right? I said, all right, fine. That's y'all's loss. I go to the next company. Almost exact conversation. Oh, my goodness, Ty, this is great. You've got a lot of experience. We've got a company car. We've got a gas car. We've got two phones for you. Still got the same call the next day, right? I got that call five times in a row.
Over a period of?
It's probably about a month.
Yeah.
Probably about a month. And
so Ty, real quick, while you're doing this, okay, you first had that reconsideration, it didn't work out, and then you finally get out and then you get these five rejections. What's your conversation maybe in your head, or what's your conversation with God at that time? Or he's not even involved. I don't know.
It was more so I was upset with society at that point. Because I'm like, okay, you say I do, you know, okay, I served my time. I did what it is you asked of me. I served the time. As a matter of fact, while I was in jail, I helped young men get their GEDs. I taught a 50-year-old man how to read. I had a library while I was there. I would loan books out. Like, you know, I was a ping pong champion. So there's a lot of things I was doing even while I was there. And I'm like, all I'm trying to do is be productive.
Yeah.
And it's not being allowed. And, you know, it was a real struggle at that point. And the crazy, another crazy thing that happened was after I got the last call, my wife had came home later that day and she was like, I got good news and bad news. I said, well, you know, I've been getting bad news all day, so you might as well just get that first. And she says, well, the apartments, I tried to put you on the lease and they said, we can't put you on the lease because of something that came in your background. So I'm like, all right, they don't want me to work. They don't want me to live. What am I supposed to do? This is why people go back to jail, because they make it so hard for you to re-enter and rejoin society that some of them just go back to whatever they were doing before.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So then she says, all right, here's the good news. And then she drops three pregnancy tests in my lap. My first question was, did you clean these? So now I'm having a kid, right? Uh-huh. A kid that didn't ask to be here. So now I'm struggling to even work and provide. I can't get, you know, housing. My wife, now I've got a kid. Now I'm starting to panic. So I said, all right, well, maybe I'm just trying to fly too high. I said, I just need to get something. I need to get something. So I decided to get, I started working for Target.
Mm-hmm. And you're 24 years old now, 24, 25 at this
time? Yeah. Okay. 25. And for all of my education and skills and all this, I'm unloading trucks for Target, right? But I was grateful. I was grateful for the opportunity that Target provided. I went on to work for Target for 14 years.
Wow. That is great.
Yeah, in my last role at Target, which was about 3 years ago, about 3 years ago, I ran the Ellicott City store. So Ellicott City Target store. This is a $62 million store. I had 275 team members, 12 team leaders, and 6 different executives. I was the district trainer for new executives. I was the regional trainer for transferring executives. And I was the campus recruiter for University of Maryland. So I would go to the campus and recruit, you know, college graduates, come work for Target, right? So I learned, you know, not only did working for Target allow me to reintegrate in society and teach me what leadership really looks like and how to be a leader. You know, it gave me a lot of experience. And from there, I've only gone on to take on even larger managerial roles at other companies. I went on to work for CarMax in management. I went on to work for Cintas in management. I worked for Cintas for about 3 years. The only reason I stopped working for Cintas is because I went on to open my own company where I teach professionals and leaders how to be more productive and more impactful and more influential through behavior design and habit formation.
That is awesome, man. Thank you, Ty, for sharing that story. That's an incredible story. And I'm honored to be sitting here talking to you right now, because you had to have resilience. You know, you had to persist. And you mentioned like how long, like Target, you got that job. Was that like the number 6 one that you tried to get? Cause you said the first 5, you got rejected, and then it was Target the next one.
Yeah. Target was the next one. Yeah.
So now you become this leader, you know, this guy, you know, we can't allow you to work here, but now you're this leader, 14 years at Target. I love that, man. I love it. So now you open up your own business. What got you involved in the, I'm going to say, what got you involved or along on that journey to personal growth and development? Because that's, I think, where this goes, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So that kind of, that goes back a little bit. So that'll take me all the way back to when I was inside. So when I was inside, I met Frank and Karen Story, who were involved in Toastmasters. And I was like, well, what is a Toastmaster? Now, at this point, for those who don't know anything about like jails and prisons, there's different levels of jails and prisons, right? You've probably heard of maximum security, right? These are people that have life sentences for the most part, 150 years and so forth, or they're just very dangerous people. Then you have medium security, right? These people have 20, 30 years. Maybe they've been locked up 20, 30 years. You know, some may even have 50 years. From there, then you have minimum security. These are people that have probably less than 10 years on their sentence, right? And some of them have come from medium security and served a certain amount of time. Then you have what you call pre-release. When you're in a pre-release jail, that means everybody's pretty much going home within the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's more freedom. The guys that you see on the side of the road picking up trash are at a pre-release facility, because if you've got 2 years left, you're not going to run off, right, from just picking up trash. If you're maximum security, they let you out to pick up trash, they ain't never gonna see you again, right? So at a pre-release facility, there are more options in terms of services and whatnot. And one of the things that I took advantage of was Toastmasters that Karen and Frank had brought there. And I learned about speaking. I learned how to be a speaker through them. So when I, you know, a few years after I came home, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, speaking. I stayed involved with Toastmasters. And it's funny that back in the day in college, like probably in like 1999, I wanted to be an actor, right? Yeah. I'm really good at it, but I also felt like actors were broke. So I was like, I'm not going to do it. At least that's what I thought, right? I was like, let me take my skills. I switched my major to like marketing or something. So anyway, and in 2013, my wife, she was a teacher. She said, hey, do you want to come speak to the students? And I was like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to speak to the students. She was like, okay, that's fine. We'll get somebody to do it. So then, you know, a few weeks later, I asked her, I said, hey, how was the little event? And she was like, oh, it went great. We brought out a guy named Lance. He did like 2 30-minute sessions where he was speaking. I was like, oh, that's great. She was like, yeah, I paid him $1,500. I said, what? You didn't tell me about $1,500. What are you talking about?
Uh-huh.
I was like, wait a minute. You pay people to just talk? Because I'll do that for free.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I found out people were being paid not just $1,500, but in some cases $15,000. In some cases, $150,000.
Yeah.
For a 45-minute speech. So at that point, I knew I'm very good at this. I enjoy it. I want to have this as a business. Now, that's 2013. That's in the beginning budding careers of my, you know, the beginning of my budding target career.
Uh-huh.
So I'd always, but when you talk about being a speaker, the first thing is, well, what are you going to talk about?
Yeah.
Right. What are you going to say? You got to have something to say.
What problem are you going to solve? Right.
What problem are you going to solve? Right. And who are you solving it for? So I wasn't really clear on that. Right. And, you know, I went through Target and I was doing my thing, and I really left Target because I was overworked. I was working about 90, 95 hours a week.
Wow.
I was mentoring probably a dozen or more people around, not only in my vicinity, but I was mentoring people across the country. You know, there were team members and executives in California that would call me, and I would have conferences with them and so forth. So, I mean, it was a lot that I was doing, not to mention the text messages and emails and group chats. You know, there was one day I worked 28 hours straight. The worst part about it was I didn't even really realize it. That's the crazy thing. Wow. I came home and my wife was like, where you been? I was like, work, duh. What do you mean where I've been? She was like, dude, you haven't been here since yesterday. And I was like, I had to start doing the math. I was like, whoa, you're right. Because I had team members who worked all day, went home, slept, took a shower, and came back, and I was still there, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, I can't do this anymore. This is draining me. So I left Target, and then I started working for Cintas. And then I was like, man, I know a little something about leadership, right? And then I went to my doctor, and at this time, mind you, I'm working at Target, started working at Cintas. I weighed about 497 pounds.
Did you really?
I did. My pants were like, well, you can't see on the camera, but they're huge, 497 pounds. Can't walk 10 minutes without leaning on something, taking a breath or what have you. Can't tie your shoes without, you know, breaking a sweat. So, but I was okay with that. I was fine. I went to my doctor, and we always have these conversations where he's like, oh, you got to lose weight. And I'm like, oh, okay. Right. And then I don't do anything. Or I try one of those diets, right? Atkins and so forth. It doesn't work for me. So one day I went in there and, you know, my blood pressure was great. Cholesterol, great. Everything's good. Except the fact that I'm like the weight of three people. And my doctor was like, look, you don't feel anything, but how does your spleen feel? And I was like, my spleen, doc, I don't know what a spleen is, nor do I know what a spleen does. And he goes on to explain the importance of the spleen and so forth. But he said, all your internal organs are under extreme duress due to your weight. You need to lose weight now because you can't feel the pressure on your spleen. But one day you may just collapse because something has happened internally. And that shook me to my core. So I started learning about first, I started with like self-discipline and willpower, and then I started slowly moving towards habits. And I've read a ton of books on habits, you know, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, Atomic Habits by James Clear.
Got them both right here, yeah, right exactly, on my shelf. Right? Yeah.
So I've read all these books and I used all that. And what I've learned about habits and behavior, and I've lost over 200 pounds.
Man, congratulations. Congratulations to you. That's awesome. So, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. So from there, I said, you know what? I know about leadership. I know about habits. And I worked directly with. So I was taught by BJ Fogg himself, the author of Tiny Habits. He taught me directly. So I'm a behavior design expert and I teach, you know, Tiny Habits. But I even take it a step further now to where my primary focus is productivity. When I look at my methodology for, you know, massive output, you know, improving your productivity, you know, I have a massive framework and methodology, and Tiny Habits is a small portion of that, right? Where I teach those ideas, but my framework is what will help leaders and other professionals reach their true reality.
That is amazing. So you're a behavior design expert. How do you design somebody's behavior?
Oh, it's actually quite simple once you truly understand what behavior is. You know, without I can go on for some time about it, but understanding the fog behavioral model is this. Every behavior that you have, every single behavior happens when three things come together at once. There's a prompt, right? There's level of motivation, right? And there's level of ability, okay? When those three things come together at once, depending on the level of motivation and ability, will determine whether you do the behavior. Let me give you an example. And usually I do this with visuals so you can really understand it, but I'll use it as I'll do a thought exercise with the phone, right? Have there ever been a time you didn't answer the phone?
Correct. Yes.
All right. What were some of the reasons you didn't answer the phone?
Well, if I had caller ID and I didn't want to talk to the person, okay. I might avoid that. Right. Maybe I was too busy. Maybe I was on another call. Okay. Maybe I recognized the phone number and I see that person's like, I got 5 minutes and then this person's going to keep me on the phone for 10. I'm not going to answer the call. Okay. Things like that.
Right. So on the one hand, like you just said, I saw who it was, didn't want to talk to him. Right. You also said, I'm busy. Like I'm in a meeting. I can't, you know, answer the phone, right? I'm sure there have been times you've been in the shower, you just didn't hear the phone, right? Right. All those things happen. Now, I just went over the prompt, which is a cue that you do the behavior, right? That's the phone ringing, or that's you're at a red light, it turns green, that's your cue to go. Right. So that's the prompt is the cue, right? Now we look at your ability and motivation. So when you see who's on the phone, you have the ability to answer the phone,
but
your motivation is low. Therefore, you don't answer the phone.
Right.
Right. Now, let's say you're in the shower. You don't hear the phone. You might be motivated to answer calls that come in, but your ability is low because you can't hear the phone. Right.
Right.
When you have the proper amount of motivation and the proper ability, the behavior will happen. You will pick up the phone. But if any of those are in extreme negative, you're not going to do the behavior, right? Yeah. And that's the crux. That's just the beginning. That's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to behavior design. So when we truly break that down and truly understand that, then you'll start to see, once you absorb that truly, then you can start to see how all of your behaviors fall into that. And you can start designing your behavior from there without even going further by limiting your own ability and motivation for things. For example, let's say, I'll make it something easy. You eat too many potato chips, right? You eat too many potato chips. I love potato chips. I love them. Give me some wavy Lays. I love it. So you're highly motivated to eat them, even though you know you're not supposed to. What can you do? You address your ability to eat them by doing what? Removing them from your house,
yeah.
Removing them from your office, removing them from your car, wherever it is you may have them. Now you've limited your ability. Now you would need a much higher level of motivation to actually get the chips, because now you got to get dressed. You got to get in the car. You've got to go to the store to go buy these chips. That takes a lot of motivation. But by the time you reach that level, it's like, is it really? I'm not even supposed to eat these chips anyway. Right?
Uh-huh.
So you limit your ability to do a behavior.
So it's like an intentional limit, put an intentional limitation on ability.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Same thing goes for watching too much TV.
Yeah.
If you say to yourself, I watch too much TV, right? And instead of just putting your remote on the bed, what if you threw your remote underneath the bed? Now, every time you want to watch TV, you've got to crawl underneath the bed. You're going to be like, you know what? I'm not going to watch any. I'm going to find something else to do.
Well, I got a better idea. You just don't have a TV in your bedroom.
that's another one. You're already getting it.
Yeah, right.
You're getting it.
I've been married, 26 years now. I've been in, I had a house, 9 years, one house, 18, this house. Never had a television in the bedroom. Choose not to do that. That's awesome.
There it is.
Ty, this has been awesome, buddy. So I got to ask this question, though. So you are where you are right now. You're successful. You have this habit strategist. Let me ask this first. Is that a business? What is the habit strategist business? And then I want to ask you my follow-up question to that.
So my business is a speaking and executive coaching business. So my primary focus is to speak to professionals, corporations, associations, and schools and colleges and speak to their staff about professional development, speak to their staff about being more productive, being better leaders, how to, you know, really build teams and just be more efficient and effective.
Awesome.
Now that's on the speaking side. Then on the coaching side, you know, I can, you know, I focus on coaching those who want to see, again, more professional development, or if you just want to build good habits, right? So as a Tiny Habit certified coach, I can help him one-on-one or even group coaching. So those are the primary areas of my business.
Thank you for sharing that. So the second question I had for you, so where you are right now, I mean, here we are. Well, you're, it's got to be about 18 to 20 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And you had that experience in your heart of hearts. Do you believe you were supposed to have that experience in prison?
I do.
Yeah. And are you grateful for that experience that you had?
I am. If I did not have, I mean, think of it like this. I mean, I believe that, I mean, on the one hand, you know, they're, I don't want to say they're conflicting kind of beliefs, but I believe that the things that happen to you happen to make you better, right? I don't necessarily subscribe to, you know, your life is already kind of planned out in that way. I don't think of it like that, but I do think that the experiences that you have can really inform and teach you how to get where you want to go.
And that's all based on attitude too. I'm sorry.
And if you don't embrace that, because there are a lot of people who don't, Rob, there are a lot of people who, I could literally say, you know what? There's nothing to learn from that. It was nothing my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm perfect at it. No, there was a lot. I chose to hang around those people.
Yeah.
I chose to go there that night. I chose ultimately to be accountable. And I said this to the judge too. You know what I mean? You know, and I'll stand up and, you know, take, you know, whatever comes to me, you know what I'm saying? But I do believe what happens to you happens for you.
I was hoping you would say that. I was going to hit that. It's because I like to think it doesn't happen to you, it happens for you. Right. So say that again. Say it one more time so everybody can hear it.
Things don't happen to you. They happen for you.
And we have to understand that, because a lot of us play a victim mentality, which Ty said he could have went down that avenue and chose not to, because things in life, they happen. Yeah, we've made decisions that have consequences, and we might say, oh, I did this and this happened to me. No, but it happened for you. And if we take that attitude of things happening for us, it's really a sounding board to the next level, because you're not a victim. You're a student. And when you're the student, you're always learning, saying this, like when things happen right now to me, I'll say, God, what are you doing for me in this instance? What's going on right now? What is it that you're doing for me that I need to figure out right now? So that was great, great example sharing that. So thank you for that answer too. So Ty, before we wrap this up, you know, so you've had a heck of an experience, you know, at age, you know, 21, got out 14 years at Target, leading people, managing people, got your own business right now. How much more chiseling does God got going on for you in the future of your life? What do you see?
Oh man, it's just getting started. As I like to say, similar to your framework, I'm a man under construction, right? And you know, this is only the beginning, man. I mean, you gotta remember, I've got, you know, not just my life, right? But I've got a 10-year-old. I've got a 14-year-old that just started high school. He was doing his thing in football. Now he's doing his thing in wrestling. And I need to guide him in such a way so that he doesn't make the same mistakes that I made, but also give him the leeway to make mistakes. So a lot of parents don't get that. They are like, no, 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 no. They need to make mistakes now. They've got to fail. They've got to feel the sting of certain things. I'm going to tell you what to do. Here's what you should do. But I'm going to leave you free to make a choice.
Yeah.
You make the wrong choice, now you learn from it. Not to say, aha, I told you so, but just said, you know, in another scenario, you will make a better decision. So there's that framework. There's the family framework. Then there's the productive life framework, right? Like, yes, I want to obviously make money in my business, but I more so want to make an impact on the planet. This is my goal. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Not to just say, you know, I'm doing it. I want to make an impact on the planet, not just my community, not just the United States, the entire planet. Now, for some people, that sounds far-fetched. Oh, there's so many billion people on the planet. There's a lot of people that have touched a lot of minds and a lot of hearts. And with the way that the internet is working and the way we have so much access, you know, the digital divide is actually shrinking. Unless you're an Aborigine somewhere living in the woods, you can get some messages that I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
So I want to increase my impact on the planet through my messaging, through my speaking, through my writing, through my coaching, to make a positive impact on the world.
I think you are, man. I hear it in your heart right now. It's coming through loud and clear, man. I love it. And I appreciate that. So it's funny you're saying, you know, I like you're talking about letting the kids fail. We're going to wrap up with this in a sec. So you let the kids fail. I'm going to tell you what to do. You do what you got to do. I think God does the same thing. He tells us what to do. And we do. And I'm going to give you enough rope to hang yourself so you can feel the stings. Yeah. Now, after you feel the sting, you might have a different road back. It might not be the exact straight line that you wanted to take or thought you were going to take. But mm-hmm. That's all part of this process, man. It's all part of this process. And for you to say you're grateful for that time that you were in prison is a big statement, because there could be bitterness there. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you, Ty. And thank you so much. I'm looking forward to get to know you better after this. And I didn't even mention this early on. He talked about in the prison how what the kind of started to change or got him on that journey of personal growth and development was Frank and Karen Story, who I'm indebted to as well, because I met Frank and Karen Story back in 2001 or 2002 through the same Toastmasters. Well, I say the same Toastmasters program. I wasn't in the New Genesis Club, but they got me into prison to speak to these guys, and I've done it 5 or 6 times now, and it's been a really cool thing for me and a spiritual thing at that. So Karen and Frank Story had a lot to do with a lot of people. They probably don't even know the impact they're having. And they did a podcast previous on Chiseled about being a Toastmaster. So thank you for sharing that. And that's the connection Ty and I have here today. That was Frank and Karen Story had made an introduction and we had to get Ty on here. So Ty, thank you. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Oh, they can find me at thehabitstrategist.com, or they can find me on all of my social media, be it Twitter, be it Instagram, TikTok, The Habit Strategist. It's all The Habit Strategist throughout all of my social media. But again, you can find me at thehabitstrategist.com, where you can, you know, you can buy a shirt, you can download an ebook. You can subscribe to my newsletter so that you can stay up on the new habit developments and newest research.
Well, I'm going to do that myself, Ty. So thank you again. Appreciate you. Thank you for being here. And till next time, everybody, let's go get chiseled.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than You Think.